Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hanging out with Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Brano. We're being joined now by SMU head coach Sonny Dykes, one of the finalists for the Bear Bryant Award. Coach Dykes this season went 10-3, first 10-win season at SMU since 1984. Congratulations on a big year, and thanks for stopping by. Tell us about just your job this season with SMU and the season that you had there with the Mustangs.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Fun year. I mean, it really was. Fun year, got off to a great start, 8-0, and had an opportunity to go compete on, you know, a nationally televised game on ABC, College Game Day at Memphis, and had a hell of a ball game against Memphis. Came up a little short, lost by 7 or by 6, I believe. And, you know, an exciting football game and was really proud of our guys. I think we reached, you know, the polls, maybe got as high as 16, something like that. So it was good. It was a good season for us, you know, in the second year there. You know, the best thing I think about this year was we learned a lot. You know, we had an opportunity to, you know, to compete in some big games and, you know, had a chance to come back and win some hard-fought games and, you know, and then didn't end the season the way that we wanted to. So I think it left a bad taste in our mouth and certainly has us motivated moving forward. And, you know, we got a lot of guys coming back, got 9 starters on offense coming back and, you know, had a little success on that side of the ball last year. So excited about the future, looking forward to, you know, to getting after it again soon. And it was a fun year, though.
Coach, I think in your world and even in our world, I think there's mixed emotions and opinions about transfer portals, guys' ability to move from one program to the next. You guys obviously had a lot of transfer ins this year and did a hell of a job with those guys. They didn't just come in and fill voids. They came in and were contributors, key contributors, man. Was that something that you guys, when you took the job and you realized, hey, this year we're going to have to do that, or is it something that you just – you recruited the hell out of guys and ended up getting a bunch of them?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I don't think when I took the job at SMU, I didn't think we were going to become, a football program that took that many transfers. It's one of those things that happened. When we first got there, Reggie Robertson was a wide receiver that was at West Virginia that reached out to us and was coming home, was homesick, was really not happy where he was, and reached out and said, hey, you know, I want to get back to Dallas. I want to see my family. I want to be around my friends. I want to want to play at home. And so we got Reggie in and he applied for a waiver and got a waiver and was immediately eligible and, you know, had about 1,200 yards receiving that year as a sophomore. And so I think at that point people looked at Reggie and said, wow, this happened, you know, and this kid had this kind of success. And you know, that first year we weren't very good and Reggie was certainly a bright spot for us. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like the floodgates opened, you know. And the big one for us was obviously Shane Buchel coming over from Texas. And same thing, Shane was a Dallas-Fort Worth kid that had a lot of success. That Texas started 19 games there, you know, won some big games, played well, and, you know, ended up losing the job to Sam Ellinger. And so, you know, was looking around. You know, Shane just wanted to go play someplace. And the great thing about Shane, he was one of those kids that graduated, you know, in a very little amount of time. He had 2 years to play. So he came in, had a great year for us this year. He's got another year next year. And as he came in, all of a sudden, like I said, more kids got interested. And you know, we started getting kids that were calling us. And at one point, you know, during the middle of the season, we had 48 kids or people that were interested in coming back, that their high school coaches had reached out. They had reached out to players on our team, you know, different things like that. We had 48 guys on a board that were interested in doing it. And so the big thing you got to do is you have to understand, look, you're going to build your program with high school kids. You know, we just are. Right now, we're not going to probably get as many high-profile kids, or at that point, we weren't, because we hadn't won. You know, we just hadn't won, and there hadn't been a lot of success at SMU through the years. So for us, it was a way to get a better player, you know, somebody that was a highly regarded guy that went to Arkansas or Nebraska or Texas A&M or wherever, you know, that's from DFW that wanted to come home and play. And so anyway, we took a lot of those guys. They've had success, and it's turned into a really good model for us. And the great thing we have at SMU is we have a, you know, we've got graduate schools that are some of the top in the country. And so, you know, we have kids that go to really good institutions, graduate, and decide, hey, look, if I can stack a master's degree on top of this degree from the University of Texas and get a business degree from SMU, when I'm done with football now, I'm pretty well set up. And Shane was one of those kids that did that, and now that's become a model.
Coach, you mentioned Shane Bouchel. I'm interested. I know a lot of our listeners know who he is, watched him win a bunch of games, respect the hell out of him as a player, both at Texas and your place. How does that work when not necessarily the transfer portal and moving and all that, but is that something where a Tom Herman and you talk and go, hey, man, this is a great kid. This is a guy that will come in and lead your program, and you don't have to worry about, and y'all exchange opinions of that kid. Is that pretty common?
Yeah, it is. I mean, as coaches, we always want what's best for the players, you know, and if somebody's looking for another opportunity, then we're going to talk to one of our counterparts and just let them know the you know, everything about the kid, the good, the bad, everything about him. And, you know, because we want him to go someplace and be successful and be happy and have a chance to play. You know, the unique thing about Shane was when I was head coach at Cal, we recruited him there, so I knew him a little bit there. And then, you know, we played him when I was at Cal. You know, they came to Berkeley, and he played as a true freshman, started, had a big game against us. You know, Cal ended up winning the game late and kind of a shootout, but you know, I got a chance to see him play firsthand, and I got a chance to see him, you know, to throw all the deep balls he threw against us. And I walked out of that game. I walked out of that game going, you know, number one, this guy throws a remarkable deep ball, and he does. I mean, I've had a chance to work with some good quarterbacks. You know, Nick Foles, who was Super Bowl MVP, Jared Goff as a first pick in the NFL draft. You know, a bunch of guys I've been fortunate to have had some good ones. And Shane, you know, Shane throws as good a deep ball as any of those guys or anybody really that I've been around. And so I saw that in that game. Then I also saw that just how he competed and the way he handled himself. You know, being a starter at the University of Texas at quarterback as a true freshman, that's taken on a lot. And I love the way he handled it. I love the way he interacted with his players. And then as this thing started to unfold, obviously I talked to Tom, I talked to assistants, talked to people close to the program, and they all said the same thing. You know, great player, but even better person. And I think that's proved to be true. I mean, he's come in, he's helped us change our culture. You know, he's just a really remarkable young kid. And so we're glad to have him and you know, really excited about what he's going to do next year.
So being at an AAC university or in that conference and being in a university that is in a major metropolitan area, there's a certain set of assets that you have in that, but there's a certain set of things that are kind of detriments when you're competing and recruiting with certain universities where it's the only game in town. You're dealing with small towns where, hey, if you go to Tuscaloosa, they're all about Bama, you know what I mean? And okay. So it's just a little different recruiting that you have to deal with. How do you focus on keeping those guys in Dallas, keeping those, because it's a recruiting hotbed? How do you focus on that and deal with the strengths and the weaknesses of being in a major metropolitan area and how that helps you and hurts you?
Well, number one, it helps because you have access to players, you know, and so what we can do, you know, and we're, you know, in the same situation with Houston and Dana and I kind of, you know, have a clear understanding of this. I mean, he recruited Houston for 20 years, just like I recruited Dallas. And so when we were assistants together at Texas Tech, he was coming to Houston, I was going to Dallas. We were sharing stories about, you know, which city was better, produced more guys. There was always a constant battle between us going on. And it's funny now that he's here and I'm there, and you know, we're both really glad to be where we are. You know, I think we've been around in our profession, and we know how much potential both of these jobs have and just what it's like to be in a city that produces this kind of talent and has this kind of coaching. But you know, you're blessed to be able to get those guys on campus. You're blessed because, you know, they can get to know you, they can get to know your program, you know, you can get to know them and see it and really build those relationships that are so important in recruiting. But as you said, sometimes, you know, you're dealing with the Texans here or pro sports, or we're driving to College Station to watch a game, and we're dealing with the same thing in Dallas. You know, there's a lot of options for that entertainment dollar. And so, you know, what we have to do is just continue to build a brand within Dallas. We've worked really hard to do that, to try to engage the city of Dallas. And, you know, we have a very small student body. I mean, we're about 6,500 undergraduate students. And so, you know, we don't have a lot of alumni. We're not graduating 20,000 people a year, you know, like some institutions. And so what we got to do is we have to engage the casual football fan in Dallas. You know, somebody that might have gone to Texas Tech or Texas A&M or University of Texas or Oklahoma that you know, wants to support the Dallas community and come to our games and watch, you know, quality college football. And so, you know, there are blessings about it and there are curses a little bit about it as well, but you know, I'd certainly rather have it that way. And what that's allowed us to do, as I said earlier, is get those kids that have gone to those other places, you know, have gone to those towns and have, you know, have had success. I mean, we're not we're not transferring guys back home that haven't played.
Right.
You know, these guys have all gone to these programs. They've played. They've been successful. They put up numbers. But they decide at some point, you know what, my family can't come. My friends can't come. And, you know, I just, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like home. So let me go back home and try to do it for my city.
Were you talking about doing it for your city and capturing that market there? Whose idea was it to wear the Triple D helmet logo when you went over there to play TCU? Because that was a big deal from my perspective. I'm from Dallas.
Yep.
I know about that rivalry, SMU and TCU. Whose idea was that? And shout out to them because they did a hell of a job.
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, I don't have many good ideas. That was
you.
That was an idea that I you know, conceptualized actually a long time ago. You know, coming to Dallas and recruiting the city of Dallas, I always would, you know, I'd go into these high schools and you know, I'd go into Carter High School and I would see, you know, logos from everywhere else, but I wouldn't see anything from SMU. I'd go into DeSoto High School. I'd go into Cedar Hill. I'd go into these high schools, Duncanville, that are putting out all this great talent, you know, and I'd go through the halls and I'd see the players and they're wearing every logo, but they weren't wearing SMU. And so at that point, and again, that kind of hatched that idea for me when I was at Texas Tech in the early 2000s. I just spent so much time in Dallas recruiting that I always remember thinking, you know, SMU somehow has got to engage this community and get guys from all over Dallas to be interested in SMU. So when I got the job there, that was one of the things that we decided, hey, look, let's try to come up with a campaign that's going to, you know, celebrate the kids in their neighborhoods that stay local. And so, you know, that I conceptualized it and got it to our creative team, and then they figured it all out, you know. And so the Triple D logo was really, that wasn't completely my idea. It was my idea. Let's try to engage Dallas. And then it was the same thing with Dallas on the uniforms. You know, let's try to become Dallas's home football team. And then the Born and Raised campaign came out of that as well. And where we put billboards up, you know, in kids' neighborhoods that have decided to stay close and go to SMU. So, you know, all that kind of took on a life of its own. You know, we didn't do it year one, quite frankly, because we knew it was going to be a struggle. We weren't going to be very good.
Right.
And so, you know, we thought year two, about the third week of fall camp, I remember getting with my operations guy, and I said, hey, man, let's get these uniforms ordered. We're going to have a chance to have a good football team, and let's roll this out together, you know, when we have some success and people can get behind it. So it all kind of fit together and worked out well.
Coach, I think I know the answer to this question, at least one of your answers to this question. We're at the 2020 Bear Bryant Awards. Obviously, you've had a hell of a career and a great year, and you've come a long way, man. And I know there's some coaches in your background that obviously helped mold you and impacted you throughout your career. Can you give us some who a few of those guys are and why?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I was really fortunate in 1997 to hook up with Hal Mumme. You know, I went to University of Kentucky as a graduate assistant in 97 and had a chance to kind of go be part of, you know, Hal Mumme bringing the air raid to the SEC. And so we got there, we had Tim Couch, and, you know, it was a great experience, and it was Mike Leach's GA in 1997, so you can only imagine what that was like.
Yeah.
And so it was a great learning experience for me, and so I got introduced to an offense that I think really revolutionized college football. I think when you go and you look at the way the game is played today, you know, Hal Mumme has probably as much has had as much impact on college football and now pro football as anybody in the game, just the way the game's played now. And so I was lucky to catch on with Hal, and then, as I said, I went to Texas Tech with Mike in 2000 and you know, worked on the coaching staff that had Art Briles and had Dana Holgorsen and had, you know, a bunch of guys. Cliff Kingsbury was a quarterback, and Sonny Cumbie was a quarterback, and Graham Harrell was a quarterback, and, oh, by the way, Lincoln Riley was a student coach, and, you know, all these guys, and Dave Aranda was a GA, who's now the D coordinator at LSU. So there's all these bright young minds that were just sitting around and talking about football all the time, and so it was just a pretty remarkable place to be. You know, you could see the passion that all of us really had for the game and the appreciation that we had for the way Mike allowed us to, you know, to coach and to have an influence. And the one thing about Leach that he's always done so well is he's not afraid to, you know, promote young people. You know what I mean? If you're competent, you work hard, you learn, you're eager. He doesn't care how old you are, what your experience is. He's gonna allow you to work yourself up the ladder. And a lot of us had jobs probably before we were ready to have them. You know what I mean? But it was an awesome place to have a chance to be a coach. And I think those guys certainly had a huge impact on my career. And then, you know, one of the things I've always tried to do was pattern myself off of Bill Snyder. I know he's receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award tonight. And, you know, my dad and Bill were close friends. You know, Bill was probably my dad's closest friend in coaching. And I got to know Coach Snyder just through my dad and just respected, you know, the way he did things, his work ethic, his ability to you know, win at some place that hadn't won historically. Just the way he did it, I think, became a template for a lot of young coaches and certainly did for me. And so I just have the utmost respect for him and excited to have a chance to see him tonight.
Coach, thanks so much for stopping by. Congratulations on being one of the finalists. Enjoy the award ceremony.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Sonny Dykes, head coach at SMU, and one of the finalists for the Bear Bryant Awards. Coming up next, let's dive into the Alex Cora. Got fired by the Boston Red Sox. What it means for Carlos Beltran, what it means for the Houston Astros, and also some audio from Lenny Dykstra and some from Alex Cora, perhaps hinting at some cheating in baseball. We do it next on Houston Sports Leaders, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Brand, and we're broadcasting live from the Post Oak Hotel Uptown for the Bear Bryant Awards. I've had good conversations all afternoon with some of the best coaches in America, and joining us at 4:35 will be Bill Snyder. Before all that, though, let's dive back into this Astros situation. Alex Cora, former Astros assistant, was with the Houston Astros, of course, in 2017. He and Carlos Beltran kind of thought of to be the masterminds, the ringleaders behind all of this. Well, Alex Cora was fired yesterday. Carlos Beltran, we're still waiting to see if the Mets do anything, if Carlos Beltran perhaps just resigns. There is one player, old Nels, you might remember him, Lenny Dykstra. Nels, he weighed in on the Astros cheating allegations. Here's old Nels and what he thinks about this whole situation.
Hey, Lenny Dykstra, Nels here, coming at you from my bed after some early service. But anyway, listen, let's talk about this Houston Astros cheating scandal. A joke, a joke, and a bigger joke. Okay, listen, me, Nels, okay, I know a lot about hitting, I know a lot about cheating, and I know a lot about the Astros and the Red Sox in 1986, okay? So what I also know a lot about is sign stealing, and what they're trying to create here is ridiculous. It's not even on the map, because as a hitter, okay, they would have to get these signs, these hitters, so fast, okay, that, and remember, a hitter, it's hard enough to hit, and then trying to wait for a bang on a trash can or whatever the they're talking about, it's ridiculous. That's how bad baseball is. So there's nothing to talk about. They're now talking about banging on trash cans, firing people. I mean, really? I mean, do you understand how fast it has to happen? From the relay a sign, the catcher puts down a sign, someone has to relay it, hit, and the hitter has to immediately think, it's that hitting's hard enough. I mean, the bottom line is, it's a joke, okay? Major League Baseball is on a witch hunt here, and they prove this, they prove that, but it doesn't help the hitter, it hurts the hitter. Because as soon as someone gives you the wrong sign once, you question it every time, okay? Just like I question Major League Baseball and what the they're doing in this, okay?
That was Lenny Dykstra, old Nels. There's some things I agree with him there. I mean, it was hilarious. It was funny. I do believe it's a witch hunt. I think what Major League Baseball is doing is kind of silly. I don't necessarily agree with Nels, though, that it doesn't help. I think if you know the pitch coming, it does help. It has to happen quick. I don't think it was as effective as people think, but it does help if you know the pitch.
JB, we talked about this yesterday. All it needs to do is in a critical moment in the game, it needs to work three times, and you go bomb, bomb, you know, bomb, double off the wall, bomb, and it changes a series. It changes you know, the that game obviously is it changes careers. It's affected careers. So I'll agree that there's they may have gone to a little further than they needed to or not. You know, there's a conversation to be had about guys losing their job, but when it's all said and done, man, this is pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, you look at two guys that have been given a year-long suspension and then were ultimately fired by Jim Crane. To me, though, I've talked to Major League pitchers. They've said if they get a whiff of the other team picking up signs, they complicate the signs with the catcher a little bit, and it eliminates all of that. It eliminates all of it. And also, going forward, why don't they just give pitchers and catchers some AirPods? You give them a couple of AirPods, you don't have to worry about cheating ever again. Just like coaches have it in the NFL, just like the quarterback has the green dot on his head, he can hear what's being signaled in, give that to the pitcher and catcher. Stop worrying about cheating forever.
I got you a way to cure the electronic deal. Take the camera out of center field and tell teams that you're just going to have to develop your players.
Well, now you can't watch the game. That's how they're getting it, from the TV feed.
No, they're not. They're getting it from a development feed that's used for players, the coaches and organizations to coach and critique the pitcher. I don't believe this is a TV feed that they're reading this thing off of. Nonetheless, you eliminate the access of a TV in a room or on a wall, literally in the hallway that leads to the dugout, right? Here's the deal, Wade, is if like...
And who introduced that? Major League Baseball.
Right, that's my point. But the deal is if you think that a coach needs to run down a tunnel or call somebody on that's an employee and go, hey, should we or should we not... replay this? Should we not ask for a replay? If you can't see it with your naked eye and have the guts to replay it, then don't do it. To call it, to challenge it, then don't do it.
Hey, Clint, you know what this whole thing is about? Look, Major League Baseball told the Astros and other organizations to chill out and not do these things. And the fact that the Astros went above and beyond and still did it, we're not talking about the effectiveness of it. Did it actually work or
right.
not? We're not talking about all that. That part doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about an asterisk and stuff like that, it does come into play on the effectiveness of it. If, like, what, people were saying, take away the rings, take away the banner, take away the championship, but
I'm talking about Major League Baseball. I'm not talking about fans. I'm not talking about, you know, talking heads that are going to say the Astros aren't good enough or they needed that to win a championship. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the reason why Major League Baseball came down so hard on the Astros. They straight up told them, don't do it, and they did it anyways, and they did it for an extended period of time after they were told not to do it, and so that's why they got the penalty they got. Talking about did it work for them or not and the effectiveness of it, that's a completely different conversation. We have proof based off of stats and things that you've seen that, for the most part, it really didn't help. That's the most frustrating part about this whole deal, is the Astros didn't need it to win a World Series. But people are going to talk. And the fact that you knew it was wrong and you still went and circumnavigated the system so that you can continue doing it, that's why you're in trouble, and that's why you got to deal with all the blowback.
Major League Baseball, back whenever they had the steroid scandal, that was a Major League Baseball issue. They didn't have a rule against steroids. They didn't have a rule against PEDs, and in fact, they were benefactors of steroid use. After the strike of 94, they had trouble getting people in the ballparks. What boosted baseball's attendance? The home run race of 1998 with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And then all of a sudden, whenever there was a huge uproar about PEDs and steroids in baseball, Major League Baseball threw those guys that saved the sport under the bus. Same thing here. This is another Major League Baseball scandal, but Major League Baseball is trying to give a couple of the figureheads, a couple of the big names, Jeff Luno, AJ Hinch, Alex Cora, Carlos Beltran, those are going to be the names and the faces of this scandal. And that's why Major League Baseball doesn't want any part of looking at every single team in the sport. They looked at one. They looked at the Houston Astros. They found out that, yes, they continued doing it. They deserve to be punished. They punished Hinch a year. They punished Luno a year. We haven't heard the punishment yet for Alex Cora, but we've been told it's harsh. And it was. They said the word harsh after the year-long suspensions from Luno and Hinch. So these are the four names that Major League Baseball is going to throw under the bus to save the sport, just like we saw on the steroid scandal in the late 90s.
But see, what doesn't make sense to me, you're talking about saving the sport. Remember, we are hearing some of the pitchers from the Astros talking about, and it wasn't just Astros pitchers, but it's pitchers around the league talking about there's a different ball in the regular season as opposed to what's going on in the postseason. And remember, we discussed the idea that, yeah, it makes sense to me that Major League Baseball would use a ball in the regular season that would be more apt to allow home runs, because you got 162 games, you want to have butts in the seats, you want people to be excited about the game, and then when you get to the postseason, you want the games to be close, you want it to be 4-3 ball games, they're riveting. And so if you have, and the pitcher straight up said, this ball is not the same ball that I threw 3 weeks ago when it was, you know, the 137th game in the season.
Yeah.
So if the Major League Baseball is going to do things like that, I don't understand why they're going to treat this as if it's such a bad thing what the Astros did, except the fact that they told them not to do it. I told you not to do it, so now you're going to reap the repercussions of it. But at the end of the day, I don't think the actual cheating that they did made a difference whether the Astros won a World Series or not. And so from that respect, if you're a fan of the Astros, you can say, you know what, my team is a World Series champion, and you can never take that away because we were the best team in baseball.
And there's two longtime baseball guys that have since spoken after this. Logan Morrison, who was in the big leagues for a long time, says that he knows the Astros, Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers were all cheating. And Tim Flannery, a longtime Giants head coach, says that, you know, this is something that has been going on for a long time. Maybe not to this extent, but it's a Major League Baseball problem. And these four names, Luno, Hinch, Cora and Beltran right now are the figure of it. We'll see if other people talk. We'll see if more comes of it in the coming weeks. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham are broadcasting live from the Post Oak Hotel Uptown for the Bear Bryant Awards. Coming up next, we're going to talk to a legend in the business, Bill Snyder, who's going to be given the Lifetime Achievement Award tonight. Conversation with him next as you listen to Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Hanging out with Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham, broadcasting live from the Bear Bryant Awards Post Oak Hotel in Uptown. We're being joined now by an absolute legend in the college game, Bill Snyder. He'll be given the award tonight for the Lifetime Achievement Award. And Coach, hearing that, Lifetime Achievement Award for your career, what does that mean to you?
Well, it means I'm far older than most people that are here. It means a great deal. You know, I'm very honored. I've been at this event three times, and it's fantastic. You know, I love what the event stands for. The American Heart Association has been absolutely amazing. We've had players in our program that over a period of time in their lives have been affected by heart diseases and what's taking place and progress being made through the American Heart Association is really special. And, of course, you know, Coach Bryant, everybody is a fan of Coach Bryant. And I grew up that way, and nothing has changed over that period of time.
What's your fondest memory of Coach Bryant, being just an admirer of him from afar?
Well, I always admired the fact that he seldom seemed to stray from a value system. That he was certainly a demanding individual and coach, but at the same time seemed to be a man of principle and a man of value and a man that didn't bend in terms of discipline and integrity. I mean, those kind of value, you know, certainly hard work and all that goes along with it is there, but you know, it's just that value system that I admired, you know, so much.
Coach, you talk about Bear Bryant's value system. You architected two dramatic turnarounds at K-State. You dedicated a ton of time to Kansas State. What about your value system? You've done some amazing things in the coaching circles. What systems do you believe in? What drives you?
Well, I think, you know, when I was a very, very young coach coming out of college and went through the high school ranks, small college, et cetera, you know, it was all about football and it was just trying to get ahead. And that didn't work well. I was a miserable coach. I mean, I wasn't very good, you know, at what I was doing. And I realized that, you know, there were people in my life, starting with my mother, and particularly my mother, but people that had amazing influence on my life, and I appreciated so much what the directions they tried to guide me. And it made sense that that was my role, was to be able to guide and direct young people to become successful in their lives and develop a value system that was important, you know, in our lives. And when I started, you know, coaching with that being the primary goal for me, I began to enjoy it more. It was far more rewarding. And so I've kind of followed those principles for, you know, the past 40 years or so of my life and my coaching. The, you know, we have, I mean, you, they're all over the country. We have, just to address it very simply, you know, we have those 16 Wildcat Goals for Success, which you can find any place, and they're nothing that you wouldn't teach your children, and they're nothing that your parents haven't taught you, but they're sound principles and values that are important in having a successful and worthwhile life. And we have programs, or we had programs within our program to develop each one of those principles or each one of those values. So it wasn't just words, just things you put on a locker room wall, you know, but they were programs in place to try to enhance those values.
How did you evolve whenever it came to those values and those principles? Were you coaching them the same, you know, whenever you were coaching 4 or 5 years ago as you were maybe 20 years ago?
You know, it's not that there aren't changes, you know, from time to time, but as it relates to those values and those principles, there are very slight changes. Maybe some ways in which we have created the programs that would address each one of those values, you know, those have been altered from, you know, year to year to a certain degree, but once again, the principles stay the same.
Bill Snyder is our guest, broadcasting live from the Bear Bryant Awards at Post Oak Hotel Uptown. Tonight we'll be receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award. Whenever you first started coaching, what were some of the goals? What were some of the aspirations?
Well, I think when I first started, I was at Gallatin High School in Gallatin, Missouri. K through 12 were 100 students. I coached football, basketball, track, drove the school bus, made $6,000. Thought I'd died and gone to heaven, really. But it, you know, at that time it was, what can we do to win? You know, that was the most significant thing. And what can I do to get ahead, and how can I move on and take the next step? And over, like I said a while ago, over a period of time, you know, I went through that for a while, and like I said, I was a pretty miserable coach. And but then things changed for me, and things got better.
Coach, you won the Bear Bryant Award in 1998, which was a good year. Who was your quarterback that year?
Bishop? Good question. Michael Bishop.
And I believe he's a Texas guy, isn't he?
He is a Texas guy. He lives in Conroe, Texas, and Michael will be here. Tonight. Just went through, just had, you know, as it relates to the Heart Association, just had a stroke and is recovered out of the hospital and doing quite well right now.
That's great news.
Should be here this evening. Yes, good man.
I tell you what, you mentioned Michael Bishop. He was one of those guys because we came out around the same time. I graduated high school in 99. I think he came out a couple years before that. There weren't a lot of guys like Michael Bishop playing quarterback at that time. And like, he's one of those guys that nowadays fits right in with a lot of what's going on in college football and now in the professional level. What did you see in him at that stage? And what, because it almost is like you're a trendsetter when you put that opportunity in front of Michael Bishop, gave him opportunity to play the quarterback position, and he did it at such a high level. What did you see in him, and what was your philosophy going into bringing him in the fold and giving him the keys to your program?
Well, just as you had indicated, you know, at the time, all the quarterbacks were pretty much the same, take it under center and drop back and throw it. And we had gotten into the quarterback run game. We initiated the quarterback run game in college football, and of course, we'd had you know, some others that had gravitated into it, but Michael was, you know, was ideal, you know, for that. Michael didn't have a scholarship offer to play quarterback. He had a number of offers to become a defensive back, wide receiver, et cetera, running back. We were the only program. That's the reason that he came, because we were the only program that offered him the opportunity to play quarterback, and that's what he wanted to do, and consequently he was highly successful. And he, you know, he executed the run game for us. I mean, they run the zone read type stuff today that everybody thinks is new, and you know, Michael did that and quarterbacks before him back in our program, and he was very, very good at it. Michael had an amazing arm. Yeah. You know, he can stand flat-footed and throw it 70 yards. you know, in the air. Now, you don't, we're not sure where it's going to go.
Hey, recruit some guys that can go find it, Coach.
That's exactly right. You bet. Throw it up there and let somebody get it. But he's a nice, good young man.
But Coach, where I was going with that, I mean, it's 2020. We're at the Bear Bryant Awards, man. And in 1998, you won this award. What did it mean then? And then moving forward this year, Coach, how big is it for one of these young guys in the profession now to take this award home?
Well, you know, it is so special because it has such great meaning. And first and foremost, when you, you know, when the name Bear Bryant, you know, comes up, I mean, there's nobody in this field that doesn't understand, you know, who Bear Bryant is and about Bear Bryant. Although I learned some amazing things last night that I didn't know. We were talking about that a little bit ago. I mean, it. The name itself has so much meaning. So, pardon me, to be associated with that name is pretty prominent for anybody. I don't care how young the coaches are, you know, that are here. I mean, they know who Bear Bryant is, and they know what he stands for. They know the degree of success that he had as well. And then you couple that with, you know, the Heart Association and the great meaning that that has for him as well.
Being joined by Bill Snyder from the Post Oak Hotel Uptown for the Bear Bryant Awards. Coach Snyder will be given the Lifetime Achievement Award a little bit later tonight whenever the awards are presented. Coach, whenever you look at college football as it is right now, as it stands, is there a thing or two that you would change about the sport?
Well, I think there are things that are coming into play that I certainly... I can't tell you that I have the answers for,
right.
But certainly need a great deal of focus. I think the process of being able, whatever it's being called, the process of being able to provide dollars and cents for student athletes. That's going to take an awful lot of work to put that into play, which is what most states are attempting to do right now, seemingly. And I think there's a great concern about it. Like I said, I don't have the answers, but I just think in terms, I mean, the simplicity of it for me is, you know, I'm a quarterback and people are pouring dollars and cents into my pocket. And this guy up in front of me, that offensive lineman, you know, gets 50 cents.
We have a quarterback and an offensive lineman right here to my right.
And
this quarterback would take care of his offensive lineman.
Well, down the but you see what I'm saying. I mean, it's, there's an uneven distribution, and I think that, you know, we talk about the athletics, football in particular, being a team-oriented event and or process, and you look at programs that are highly successful and they are very team oriented, and I think this is something that at the very base of it, you know, withdraws from that aspect, you know, takes away from the team environment. Now there's other issues as well, quite obviously, that are going to be dramatic.
What about the college football playoff? Do you like it at four teams? Do you think it needs to expand?
Well, you know, we're talking about playing so many games now. You know, I remember when, you know, it was far less than that. I mean, we played 11, including a bowl game. I think most people, we keep saying we need to do what's in the best interest of the student athlete. Do we not? I mean, isn't that the prominent thing? And yet we keep piling games on and piling them on, and the potential for more dramatic injury apparently is viable. And, you know, if that be the case, in addition to, you know, their academic ventures as well, I don't know that playing as many games as we do is really beneficial for them.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the game of football is concerned, because the appreciation for college football is at an all-time high, and it's amazing. And with TV being invested in it, it's such a high dollar event now, which is another thing that's somewhat of an issue. But it's you know, it's hard not to go to that. I mean, they're thinking dollars and cents when they're talking about expanding it. Nothing else. Yeah.
Coach, another thing that's changed dramatically, I think, over your coaching career, is the recruiting aspect. We just talked about Michael Bishop. You came down to Baytown Lee with when Dick Olin was there and got a quarterback that was there right after me, L. Roberson, who helped you win a bunch of football games. So obviously the recruiting game was something you excelled at a high level. How has that changed over your career? It's clearly a different monster today than it was 20 years ago. How have you seen that change?
Well, I think the most significant thing is probably, and there are a number of things, but I think the most significant thing is, you know, what young people are looking for today. And, you know, you look at the amount of money that's being spent on facility improvement. I mean, people are building something, and 2 years later they tear it down and build something, you know, which to me, you know, I have to question that, yeah. You know, quite obviously. But and they're trying to do what it is that attracts young student athletes. And apparently that's what is important to young student athletes, which is unfortunate. You know, because I think, you know, you have to look at your education. Certainly you look at the quality of the program and the coaches and the relationships and all that. You should. I mean, those are things that you should look at and see what kind of an education you're going to get, what kind of community you're going to live in, and all that goes along with it. But, you know, just to be starstruck by what a building looks like is not the right reason to go to school, I don't think.
Coach Snyder, what's your thought on the transfer portal? Like, that's something that's been implemented now recently in the game. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's probably, and I don't have the answer, but I think there's probably a better way to do it. You know, I can understand, you know, a young guy that is just totally unhappy, et cetera. But by the same token, you know, if I'm a player and I go out on the field and my coach gets on me a little bit and I decide I'm going to go in the locker room and get on the portal, and before practice is over, you know, I'm someplace else. And that doesn't make any sense to me, because I think it takes away part of the value system of a young person. You know, sometimes it requires, you know, if I'm number three instead of number two, maybe I need to work a little harder. You know, maybe somebody's not against me. Maybe I can just, you know, do better, work harder, do better, and I can move myself up the ladder. And at the end of the day, life's kind of like that, isn't it? I mean, you got to work your way up. So I think it takes away some of the intrinsic value system of young people. It's an amazing thing, you know, because there's, you know, from day to day, I think the very first day that it came out, I remember sitting in a staff meeting, and I asked one of the coaches about it, and they got on it, and it was first day.
Yeah.
And there were over 2,000 names already on the portal.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big number. Being joined by Bill Snyder, legendary college football coach, tonight will be given the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Bear Bryant Awards. Coach, whenever you're coaching, you always give the you know, they said that you recruited a lot of JUCOs. Is that something that you would agree with, and do you think it's something that coaches could do it a little better these days?
There was a particular year where we had a real drought, so to speak, and went out, and we brought in, I think, 12 community college players. At no time did we recruit more than that or even close to that number, but I was always open to community college players for this reason. You know, I don't think, I mean, people are people. And there are good young people in high school, and there are good young people in community colleges. There's bad in both as well, or not so good. Let me put it that way. I mean, as people. And that's what we recruited. And so it wasn't a matter of, is he, you know, in a two-year institution, or is he coming out of high school? It's what kind of an individual is he? What kind of, you know, obviously they have to be good players, But, you know, what kind of value system does he possess? And the young people that we had in our program that came out of community colleges, you know, were great young people. I mean, the scrutiny is what's important, is how well do you scrutinize, you know, the young people that you'd like to have in your program to make sure you're getting the quality of individual that you really want, which is always important to us.
Coach, Dabo Swinney's won, I believe, three of the last four of the Bear Bryant Awards, if memory serves me right. What do you think about the job he's doing at Clemson? Obviously, he's doing a great job, but what do you think about that?
I think Dabo does an amazing job. I think he's a extremely talented, great football coach, but I like the kind of person he is. And it takes me back to the championship game. And it became so evident to people that maybe wouldn't know, you know, when the young linebacker that they have was ejected from the ball game and was really, you know, truly upset. And Dabo took the time to be with him and comfort him and allow him to understand things were going to be okay. And then a little bit later on, when his quarterback threw the interception and the camera went over to Dabo, and Dabo was consoling that young man as well. Tells you an awful lot about who Dabo Swinney is.
Coach, enjoy the conversation so much. It was a pleasure getting to talk to you, and have fun tonight.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you guys, too. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Legendary head coach Bill Snyder will be getting the Lifetime Achievement Award tonight at the Bear Bryant Awards. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Brannan from the Post Oak Hotel Uptown. This is Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.